Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show. The purpose of this show is to empower and inspire you to create the life of your dreams. Radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, and peace of mind. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Cam. Today's show is called Brain Balance, the Missing Link. Now, before I introduce my special guest today, I want to tell you a little story about how I came across this so-called brain balance issue in my practice. So I'm a holistic physician and medical acupuncturist, and when I first started doing acupuncture almost, 20 years ago, something like that, you know, when I was finishing up medical school, I realized that, wow, what a great and amazing tool. People heal so much faster when I use acupuncture. So I've been very excited since that time to use this tool in my practice to help people heal. But there was always 5, maybe even 10% of the sickest of the sick people in my practice that no matter what I did, they'd only improve their symptoms for maybe a few days, sometimes just hours, and then they go back to being sick. And it was very frustrating both for them and for me because we were trying everything. We were trying to tweak their diet and give them nutritional supplements and doing the acupuncture, and they were coming, you know, as regularly as they could afford it, and yet they would always revert back to their previous state. So this was very frustrating for me. And last year I learned from a holistic chiropractor a technique that that you can actually test someone's what I call simply brain balance. And my special guest today will actually explain to you exactly what that is. And what I discovered was 100% of those patients that did not respond very well to anything I did, no matter how hard we tried, they 100% of them had this problem. They had a disruption in their brain balance. And so I started using tools to help them correct that brain balance, and lo and behold, they started healing. They didn't just get symptom relief and then go back to being sick. They started actually healing. So I feel this is a huge, important topic, and I feel it's a missing link to healing. I know there's a lot of different missing links, but this is a huge one that I've discovered. And today's guest that I have is Dr. Stephen Davis, and he's a colleague of mine who's actually trained originally as a chiropractor out in California. He always says he's a small-town doc. Don't let that fool you. He's a total brain, and he's awesome. He has a lot of people in his practice that have been everywhere else, but come to see him because he can actually do something and make a difference in their lives. So he sees very, very, very sick people and the people that other people have just kind of dismissed because they couldn't get better. He does a lot of work with energy medicine, which, of course, is my area of specialty as well. And Dr. Davis is one of those alternative physicians that has the heart and soul of medicine, and it's not just about the technique or the tools. So I'm really, really excited to have him on the show to talk about the brain balance. So, Dr. Davis, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the kind words, and always look forward to meeting with you and chatting. So look forward to what we'll do this morning.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. Well, let me ask you if you could kind of give your feedback on what I said earlier about my story, and then maybe explain what is this thing that I'm referring to as brain balance dysfunction, and maybe what does it look like to people?
Wonderful. Yeah, this is, I think, as you mentioned, it's one of the missing tools, and I believe that it is. It's a major key to unlock, because when we start in life, at conception, as we're living in a wonderful environment, about 98.6 degrees, we're being fed on a regular basis, we're breathing on a normal, we're swimming around in a ambient fluid, we're having a wonderful time. Of course, we're hoping that mom loves us and the surroundings and the music mm-hmm. and those kinds of things are all participating in our ability to come into this new world. And then all of a sudden, some huge dramatic event takes place, and I'm squeezed. All my life is just about squeezed out of me, and I show up into this new world, and within a few moments, somebody cuts that lifeline between me and Mom, and so panic, just white tingling panic just goes through my entire body. So as a little one, we are trained in the survival mechanism at the birthing process. And what happens is that we have a brain, two hemispheres. We have a left brain and a right brain. And in doing so, when we go into the panic survival mode, is that we're trying, at this moment of birth, we've got bright lights. It's generally about 68 degrees because operating rooms have to be cold. Or if it's done at home, it's still somewhat chilly coming out of Mom. Then what you have is that I've got to now breathe, and that's a panic because I didn't really have to do that before, and I have to eat. I'm hungry, and I don't know what to really do about that. And then, of course, I'm cold, and the only thing I know is yell and scream and cry. That's the only communication tool I have. And so what happens is as we move forward in the first few months of life is that we begin that there are big people. There's these large objects that come and rescue me when I cry and I scream. And so, you know, moms and dads, they learn that they got the five things they got to take care of. Is the baby fed? Is it comfortable? Does it have gas? Does it got a wet diaper? Blah, blah, blah. So we go through those routines, and what the baby learns is that, even if I'm bored, I can cry, and some big person will come pick me up and love me and take care of me. So we begin to develop into the ego part, the emotional part. I'm not necessarily uncomfortable, not necessarily having difficulty breathing, but we move into the next phase of our development, and that is the social surrounding that we find ourselves in. And what happens is that we begin to play off of these two emotions. One reality is survival, and that's just breathing, eating, and taking care of ourselves, which, of course, is triggered by the brain hypothalamus. But then what happens is that when I'm extremely uncomfortable, that then leads me into an emotion, and that emotion generally is a panic. And the same thing will happen if I'm bored, lonely, or frightful, I'll panic as well. So the panic button seems to be our default mechanism. So if we were to look at our brain as a biocomputer, what we're learning is the software of how this thing works, and we always default down into fear or panic. And when we default into fear or panic, it's either coming from my survival sensation senses, or it's coming from my offended ego, or I'm just not happy about life. And what happens is that in our first 6, 8, 10 years of life, these are our primary motivating behaviors that we have. So when I see those that are in chronically ill mode, which is a dominating part of my practice, I became curious. My practice and just the way I think, I was a kid in school when the teachers would say something. I really wasn't obnoxious, and I wasn't unruly, and I wasn't disrespectful. It's just when they said things that didn't make any sense to me, I would have a look on my face like, that doesn't make any sense. As an example, real simple, in the Krebs cycle, every person who does exercise physiology, everybody who's a nurse, everybody who's a physician, a clinician, anything, has memorized the Krebs cycle half a dozen times. Real simple. Is that four ATP, go through the Krebs cycle, and we should end up with 32 ATPs, and 32 ATPs are the things that are necessary for energy. So therefore, everybody who's sitting in class is exhausted, and their adrenals are shot, and they can't keep awake. But yet we have these professors telling us that 4 ATP will turn into 32 ATP and you have all the energy you need to survive. And I just look around and go, that doesn't make any sense, because let's look around the class. Something has failed. Because we know the Krebs cycle is primarily driven by sugar, and everybody slurped down their coffee, and they put 4 or 5 scoops of sugar in it, and then, of course, their milks and lattes and all the things. But today we've got Starbucks, and, of course, they got not a donut so much, but they've gotten healthful, so they've got a muffin of some kind. The main difference is that we're carb loading, and what happens is that that's supposed to feed in, and the only other mechanism in the Krebs cycle is oxygen. So if I have my oxygen and my sugar, I should be able to make my ATP. And so we look at that and go, but everybody's exhausted, fatigued, and tired, and what's going on? Well, it's because we have this kaleidoscope of things inside us that make our body run. So first and foremost, we have two brains. In other words, if we just open up the skull and look inside. In anatomy class, the first thing we kind of look at when we're looking at the brain is that, wow, there's two hemispheres. They're basically saying they're huge. What do those things do? And what we find is as we have gone through time and through evaluation, there's a left brain and right brain, and they're connected with some very sophisticated fibers. We call them common Schur fibers. And what they do is they connect and retract information going from left and right brain. So what happens when we panic, we default into our left brain. And we go, well, what does that mean? Well, through time, we have learned that your left brain is your logic brain. It's your ABC brain. It's my how do I get out of a burning building brain. It's how I get through the woods without being eaten up by a lion, tiger, or a bear. Oh, my. So we have a logic brain. We have a sequential brain, meaning what's the fastest way to go from A to B. We have a rational brain, which is the, you know, the thinking thing, and the analytical brain. So we're in panic. We first have to analyze our situation and figure out the next step. It's mostly objective, meaning that it doesn't have a lot of emotion there because it's too busy trying to figure out how to survive. And then it looks at parts. It likes to tear things apart and look at the different sequencing. Right brain, on the other hand, is where healing comes from. It's random. It's intuitive. It's connected to all the parts. It synthesizes information from a lot of different parts of the equation. It's subjective, meaning that it has the thinking thing going, but it's more a big picture, if you will. Kind of looks at the whole rather than looking at the specific. And so what happens is that we have these two distinct compartments, if you will, of our biocomputer. One is for the, I would say, the CPA, specific jot and tittles, numbers, and those things. And the other one, big picture, what am I going to do with all those jots and tittles and numbers, right? And they need to communicate. So here's the deal. When I'm running through the woods because a bear tried to crawl through my camper, right, is that I'm not really interested in how beautiful the moon is and how beautiful the stars are and the smell of the roses and the pine trees and those things. I'm just worried about getting to the next place that will be safe. And I'm going through my left brain logic patterns because it's quicker, it's faster, and those kinds of things. Well, what happens is that when we are not being attacked by an animal of that type, but we're just in the emotion of school and I've got a paper I've got to get done, or I just have this relationship, somebody just texted me, and I have my mother wondering what I'm doing, and I have and I have and I have, and we keep defaulting down into this left brain because it's our fear, panic, default brain. What happens is that our healing brain is not working. So in our sympathetic, parasympathetic system, get real technical just for a moment, we have a nervous system. So just like in our brain, we have two basic components of the nervous system. We have a sympathetic system, which raises your blood pressure, gets your heart rate going, causes your digestive tract to act funny, causes us to have strong muscles and bones, those kinds of things. So the sympathetic nervous system is akin to and connected to our fight, flight, survival. And our parasympathetic system is connected to, if you will, to our right brain, which is our healing, our creative brain, the intuitive brain, those things. And so the difference is that when I'm in stress, panic, I'm also in sympathetic mode. Mm-hmm. When I'm in peace, love, joy, I'm in parasympathetic mode. And when I'm in parasympathetic mode, healing happens. Now, a couple interesting things about physiology. When we go into sympathetic lockdown, okay? I just had this crazy phone call from the IRS, right? And all of a sudden, I'm worrying about everything. Or the other just simple thing is that I'm camping and I've got this bear that's trying to get through my truck or through my camper. Well, what's very interesting to me is that when we just look at basic physiology, is that my heart rate's going to go up because the adrenaline is being released because I'm stressing. And as the adrenaline is being released from my adrenal gland, so is cortisol, because if I bump into things and hurt myself, I have an immediate conversion chemical, cortisol, to take busted protein and convert it to sugar very quickly. So what happens is that in my stress mode of being able to run through the bushes to get away from danger, what happens is blood shunts from the front of my brain to the back of my brain, to my hindbrain, as we call it, cerebellum. This is your motor coordination. Make sure you have plenty of blood flow that you can adequately do that job. Then what happens, the core, all the blood that's in your belly, all the blood that's in your lungs, and all the blood that's in your heart basically shunts out to your extremities and to your muscles. So your muscles get full and engorged because there's a shifting that takes place of the blood flow because of demand. The demand is I'm going to run as fast as I can to get out of danger. Well, what's interesting as well is that your heart rate goes up, your respiration goes up, your blood pressure goes up. But what's also interesting is your digestive tract goes down. Every mom and every grandma who goes to a picnic and has a family gathering knows that the babies, after they've eaten everything and gorged themselves, we got to keep them quiet for about 20 minutes, because if not, and they go out and go play soccer with their friends, what happens? Somebody within 15, 20 minutes is going to cry of a bellyache. Well,
right.
Where did the bellyache come from? Well, the bellyache came from is that if I'm out running around using my muscles, my gut's not digesting the food. And we got to get the food past the first portal, which is the stomach and small intestine, the first portal, to be able to have this tension between blood flow for digestion versus blood flow for running and playing. Now, even though running and playing is a fun thing, is that if I got food in my digestive tract, stomach, and small intestine, what will happen is I'll get a bellyache. Why? Because I'm not digesting, I'm actually putrefying, and gas, extension, different things are happening, and the belly just really hates distension. So what we end up with, every mom, every grandma knows, we don't know the science. We're trained. All we know is I'm not letting Billy play, because every time he plays after he eats, he gets a bellyache and ruins the entire picnic. So what we do is we stop that so that he can then go on and go on to later to play. And he's happy, mom's happy, and we have a wonderful time at the picnic. Well, in real life, adults who stay in a left brain lockdown stress mode, sympathetic driven mode, have all kinds of belly pain. We generally call it ulcers and indigestion, colitis, and irritable bowel, because we've got more sophisticated names to it, but it's the same mechanism. It's just it's taken over time. Then also what happens, blood pressure goes up and stays up, so we've got to medicate it to drop it. What we really need to do is take the stress out, get them out of left brain lockdown. We've got to balance the brain. So in that, what we have is that in the fight, flight, survival game, we default into left brain lockdown. And in ego, when I'm offended, so I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm mad, all I'm doing is I'm driving to go park the car for to go to the restaurant to have a business meeting, and somebody pulls into the spot I'm supposed to go into, and I get ticked off. Ruins the whole lunch. Don't have to. The emotion is that time, space, find another parking spot. But what happens is we get all fussy because we got these time pressures. It's an important meeting. I'm an important person, and somebody just cut me off, and so therefore my ego goes, and I'm offended. So I become a victim of my own ego, and I become a victim of my own fears. And many of our fears, we've said many times and have read in literature many times, 90% of our things that we fret and stew over never come to pass. But yet we spend all this time and energy in that.
Oh, yeah.
So the big so the big picture is, we have this brain, and on top of it, if we open up the skull, we got these two hemispheres. So we have a left brain, which is logical. We have a right brain, which is more intuitive and creative. And when the two work in harmony, we have a beautiful, wonderful life. So to really get a big view of this, there was a gal who gave a lecture at TED.com a couple years ago. She hit the internet. It was wonderful. Her name is Jill Bolt Taylor. And she was a neuropsychiatrist, and basically what happened is that when she was a young child, her young brother was diagnosed as schizophrenic, and she wondered why he had a bad brain and why do I have a good brain. And as a young child with this question, she goes on into the sciences to try to solve her brother's problem. And in doing so, as a brain expert, she has a stroke in her left brain hemisphere.
Wow.
So for a very few moments, the magic happened. A person trained in the sciences of neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, is experiencing what it feels like to have your left brain turn off and to be in 100% right brain for a few moments before she passes out. So she tells this beautiful story, because the beauty is, with all said and done, it takes her 8 years to get her life back. She says, if I could just live in my right brain at least 90% of the time. And if you could, the world would be a different place. Because we would get out of our survival mode and our victimization mode, and we would live in the bliss of the intuitive mind, the holistic mind, the synchronism, the challenges that take place, and how we're all one of the big, and we're all part of the whole. So beautiful little thing. It's only about 8 minutes. But what it does when you see that and you see her share that, what happens is that you go, oh, this is what those people talk about. Because if you've never been there, it's kind of like if you are an avid skier in the snow, playing in the snow, and you go down to, let's say, the Peruvian jungle, and you're trying to share with the shaman there what snow is and what skiing is and playing in the winter is. They have no idea because they have no concept. So if you have started life in a stressful environment and you continue in the stressful environment, and your ego develops and you become a victim of your surroundings and you stay locked in this left brain lockdown, you don't know what right brain is.
Well, and that's so common that Dr. Davis, that, you know, when I do this testing people in the office and I check their right-left brain balance and their regulation of the autonomic nervous system, so many of them, when I ask them about their stressors, and I'm not even including, you know, I was asking them about their emotional stressors. I'm not even including electromagnetics or toxins or all that kind of stuff. And they say to me, oh, I'm not stressed.
Right.
Oh, I'm not stressed.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I used to be stressed, but I'm not stressed right now. And yet I test them, and, boy, they're way off.
Correct, exactly right. And the reason is that if you, let's say we did this experiment in chiropractic college. You tie down your right arm, if your right hand dominant, for about a month. So everything is, you've got to go with your left hand. You've got to do everything. You've got to write. You've got to do everything. Well, what happens, even in just a 30-day experiment, when you untie and you begin to use your arm, there's a few moments where you got to spend some time re-honing in your fine skills. So in our body, our survival mechanism defaults into these left brain behavior, and there's another interesting phenomenon happens, and this was beautifully portrayed in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, has to do with neural net and neural tracking, and that the more you use a particular freeway in your brain, the larger is the freeway and the quicker it is. So what happens as we grow and develop in time, what happens is that we actually make the left brain much, much more efficient. In other words, we're able to track into it very, very quickly, and it's really, really difficult to go to right brain. Really difficult. Even if you take on a meditative practice, many of the meditative behaviors in our culture that we have adopted from different parts of the world are basically to help us open up this right brain and connect and let those two communicate on a better basis, if you will. But the phenomena is that Dr. Jeff Marangel and myself, we began talking about this a couple years ago because of the observation that we saw is that everybody's in left brain lockdown, and those that are desperately ill are in left brain lockdown to the point that their right brain is atrophied. They've lost their ability to heal efficiently because no matter what we do, we can't seem to get the energy to flow through that system efficient enough so that the healing energies will flow. Because here's the deal. When you're in left brain lockdown and you're in sympathetic overdrive, as we call it, what happens is that your capillary beds are under the control of this autonomic nervous system, and what happens is vasoconstriction is the mainstay. What we want is vasodilation. We want to get the blood and nutrients to the areas that are in trouble. But what happens is that what the body does to an area that's injured, it draws up the blood flow. Many of the things that we do, and even conventional medicine, is to try to get the blood flow to perfuse through the area so that we can get the nutrients there. You take all the supplements and nutrients, can't get it to the area it needs to go to because the capillary beds are in a constricted state. The reason they're constricted is because I'm in left brain lockdown. I'm either in fear, worry, anger, frustration, or I'm in ego offended. And what happens is that I'm staying in this state of like a chihuahua. I'm nervous and I don't know why. Or like the Alabama song, I'm in a hurry and I don't know why.
So in that,
what we have to do is we have to allow that to open. Well, how do we know if we've never been taught? Because generally we hang around people that are like us. In other words, when we hang around people that, it is very, very interesting, just social dynamics. People who are in a chronic left brain lockdown, we tend to call them our nervous types. They're the fussy types. They're in a negative mindset. they're the sky is falling type. You know, the stock market's going to crash. The end of the world is coming. They're going to nuke us. And all the things that go on with the fears, the radiation from Japan is going to melt everybody, and on it goes. So they stay in a state of negativity, and they stay in a state of reading and observing negative things. They stay locked on to television shows, you know, not to pick out anybody, but well, just for a second. Like Fox News has a tendency to be real negative on a regular basis. And the positive side of news just doesn't seem to be there. So if people stay there day in and day out, they get all this negative stuff in their head. Well, you go to CNN, they got the negative news from a different slant. So they got the same problem, because news in and of itself, by design, is to share the bad things. It's really, really hard to sell good stuff. It's boring.
Well, I hate to interrupt you. We have 4 minutes left. I want to make sure that we start at least. I want to. I know your website is drddc.com, right, Dr. Davis?
Right. Absolutely.
You have a lot of really great videos there that you've posted. Like,
yes.
It'll take you weeks and weeks and weeks to learn and watch them. But it's great that you have this great resource that people can go to. And you've got some great videos on the brain. And can you just, in the last, 4 minutes or so, share maybe one or two of your, if it's appropriate, remedies that you use? I use LifeWave Eon patches on the head to rebalance the brain. And what do you use?
Sure. Well, beautiful. You have up on the website a way of self-testing. Or if you don't know how to self-test or feel uncomfortable, find somebody that is familiar with applied kinesiology. And it's easy to find either through Dr. Khan and her association associates, or with myself, or just in the Yellow Pages. But the real point here is that there's several ways to balance. The first question is become aware. That was the point of this little interview. To become aware that we have left and right brain, be aware that you're in left brain lockdown, and to be aware that you need to get over to the right brain. So how do we do this? Well, what I like about the Dalai Lama, he said pray and meditate. And, of course, Larry King said, for how long? And he said, until you're balanced. And then Larry King said, well, that would take me a long time. And then the Dalai, very cute, said back to him, that's why you're not in balance. So pray and meditation has been the key forever. The problem is it's like our slow mail when we look at the computer and Internet.
Right.
Other techniques that have come along to help us here, to get here quicker, faster, because we're looking, how do we get there quick? EFT has a tapping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of folks up there on the Internet for that. That will allow you to help you get there. Okay? My daughter is an expert in emotional release works. We created a video. You go to my website, DRDDC. She has a video called Stillness. And what it does is that within about 90 seconds puts you into right-left brain balance.
Nice.
Then we have some modalities. Dr. Khan is very familiar with LifeWave and the patches, the Eon patches, very effective on acupuncture points to bring in the balance. And then I look at that as well, but also I have my own remedies, Neutral Link, a company I created through a quantum physicist that I worked with. We created a product which is called ANS, ANS to balance the autonomic nervous system, to be able to take you out of left brain lockdown and allow you to modulate longer. Because when we ask the question, if I get myself out of left brain lockdown and I'm balanced, how long will I stay balanced for? This is the beauty of LifeWave patches and also my remedies, is that it's really, really hard to tap all day long.
Oh, yeah,
and
exactly.
And it's really, really hard to you get bruised after a while. The other thing is...
And if you tap with patches on, it's even better.
That's
right.
What
we found.
And then with stillness... is that it's a matter you have to be still. So sometimes you just can't get there right away, but you will get there. And then meditation, of course, or traditions or prayer, or traditions take extended period of time, because what you have to do is that through your prayer and your breathing and your thinking and your getting out of yourself and going to a higher level, that takes time, and your left brain has to let go and your right brain has to then take on. And so it's a slower process. So what's beautiful is that we have tools, LifeWave patches, and my remedy called ANS, which has the ability to take you out of that quickly, almost immediately. But then you have to be mindfully aware of what got you there, which are the fear, frustrations, and challenges that got you there, as well as your ego. So you become mindful about that, and you become more inter-aware that this is how I got here, and start making proactive choices to let those things go. So the goal for me, for our patients, is not to just become completely detached, but become mindfully detached from the circumstances that got them there. So our chronically ill people are constantly in a fear mode wrap-up, and what we have to do is open them up and get them to right brain to heal. But to do that is that they must let go of the things that have got them bound up, and so that's an emotional release work.
Wow, that is fabulous. I know I said before on my other show with Dr. Davis, I could sit here for hours and hours and hours and pick his brain because I just love it. So thank you so much. This is such a great explanation. Really certainly clarified things even more for me. And I just put in my order for ANS, which is one of your NutriLink remedies. So thank you very much. Love to use that in combination with some of the other remedies you have on your website as well. And so if you're probably listening to the archives, because we're not live on the air anymore, so if you're listening to the archives and you want to know where to get this, just opt into my newsletter. I will actually have a newsletter out that explains a little bit more of this and send you the links to Dr. Davis's website and that awesome video page. So thank you so much, Dr.
Thank
D. You totally rock. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Always look forward to this time because it's an opportunity to share some information. I appreciate your enthusiasm. It makes me feel good all over. So this is good. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.